Voy a ponerme la vacuna Prevnar 20 porque estoy en riesgo de contraer la neumonía neumocócica,
la cual pudiera llevarme al hospital. Así que preguntaré sobre Prevnar 20.
65 años o más, puedes estar en mayor riesgo de contraer la neumonía neumocócica. Pregunta a tu médico o farmacéutico acerca de vacunarte con Prevnar 20. Vacuna conjugada antineumocócica 20 valente. Una vacuna de Pfizer que puede ayudar a proteger contra la neumonía neumocócica con una sola dosis. Prevnar 20 está aprobada para adultos para ayudar a prevenir infecciones contra 20 cepas de la bacteria que causa la neumonía neumocócica. La aprobación continua puede depender de un estudio de apoyo. No uses Prevnar 20 si has tenido una reacción alérgica grave a la vacuna o a sus componentes. Adultos con sistemas inmunitarios debilitados pueden tener una respuesta reducida a la vacuna. El efecto secundario más reportado fue dolor en el área de la inyección. Para más efectos secundarios comunes e información completa de prescripción, llama al 1-855-213-2138 o visita Prevnar20enespañol.com. Pregunta a tu médico o farmacéutico sobre Prevnar 20. Si tienes ciertas afecciones crónicas como
enfermedad cardíaca,
asma,
diabetes,
y tienes 19 años o más,
52,
36,
42,
puedes estar en mayor riesgo de contraer la neumonía neumocócica. Pregunta a tu médico o farmacéutico acerca de vacunarte con Prevnar 20. Vacuna conjugada antineumocócica 20 valente. Una vacuna de Pfizer que puede ayudar a proteger contra la neumonía neumocócica con una sola dosis. Prevnar 20 está aprobada para adultos para ayudar a prevenir infecciones contra 20 cepas de la bacteria que causa la neumonía neumocócica. La aprobación continua puede depender de un estudio de apoyo. No uses Prevnar 20 si has tenido una reacción alérgica grave a la vacuna o a sus componentes. Adultos con sistemas inmunitarios debilitados pueden tener una respuesta reducida a la vacuna. El efecto secundario más reportado fue dolor en el área de la inyección. Para más efectos secundarios comunes e información completa de prescripción, llama al 1-855-213-2138 o visita Prevnar20enespañol.com. Pregunta a tu médico o farmacéutico sobre Prevnar 20.
Conan, I got a question for you.
Yo, what it do? Boom.
Are you looking for one of the most exhilarating and effective forms of home fitness?
Bro, I think I found it.
Yeah, well, let me introduce you to Fight Camp, an interactive at-home boxing. Fight Camp brings the best workout in the world into your home and makes it fun. Explore thousands of workouts led by expert trainers with decades of experience teaching proper boxing form and technique. Fight Camp also has live punch counting stats that motivate you to push harder and help you map out your progress. Knock out achievements or go head-to-head against other members from across the country or across the living room. One of the best things about Fight Camp is that it makes boxing accessible to everyone. No matter what your fitness level is, what your age is, or what your experience with boxing is, you can do it. And you're going to have a great time. How do you think you'd rank on the Fight Camp leaderboard? Do you think you'd be in first place? You used to box, right, Conan?
I don't know if I'd be in first place. I'm not in that type of shape, but it's gotten me into great shape. It's getting me into great shape.
Yeah, so join the biggest boxing community in the world without leaving your home. Fight Camp packages start at just $99. They even offer some great financing options and get started for as low as $9 a month. To get everything you need, go to fightcamp.com/Conan to learn more. That's fightcamp.com/KONAN.
Have you or Joe received yours yet?
I haven't got mine yet.
Have you, Joe?
Yes, I have, actually, yeah. I have it set up right down here in the basement.
Tell people your experience and I'll tell them mine.
Yeah, it's not, you know, it doesn't take up much space. It's on a stand, so it's not, you don't have to hang anything from your ceiling. And you can go on and use all the different lessons and stuff. Like for me, I never had any boxing training, you know, so I was like, let me do this the right way. So I go on there, I've taken the beginner classes and moved on. It keeps your scores, it keeps your progress, it tracks everything. And, you know, the trainers know what they're doing, and it's a lot of fun watching the different clips and competing. You compete against anyone you want. You compete against friends if they're on, people around the world, whatever. There's international leaderboards. And it's a great way to exercise. It's a lot of fun.
Right. The great thing about this thing is you can do it in your house. So you don't have to go to a gym, pay gym memberships, you know, change in the gym clothes, park. You know, sometimes you want to get a late workout in and you can't because the gym is closed, you know, or wait for people to put their weights back or whatever. This thing right here conditions you. It tones your arms, your legs, your stomach, everything. And it gives you cardio at the same time. And you can put it in your house and you can work out whenever you want. And the great thing is it has different programs. So if you want to work out for 15 minutes, you only got 15 minutes to work out, you get a 15-minute workout. And if you got an hour, you can get an hour workout in. It's great. I love it. And I'm glad that I purchased it and it's helping me get into shape. Check out fightcap.com. Boom.
I will say this. I like Punk's work. He works that WWE style that makes the matches make sense and stuff. He doesn't do 900 million false finishes and so, you know, so,
right.
So
yeah.
you know, he can talk. I mean, he is a good character. But my thing was, is like, at his price tag, is he worth it at his age?
Well, it's like anything else, Disco. It's caveat emptor, right? Let the buyer beware. You know what you get in punk, and you write it down. You do anything to embarrass the company, you do anything to embarrass yourself, you anything to start any shit, you're out of here. And you already know, that's it, you know?
Well, let me give you this other one, though. What about the fact that when he went on that Fox show, it didn't really do any numbers at all?
Okay, but he did do numbers when we went to AEW.
Right. Yeah, but then they
went came
down,
back.
Did an initial
he came
number.
Back.
Here's what they could do: for bring it back for SummerSlam and bring it back for WrestleMania Rumble. Like the three big pay per views, you could bring Punk in for a month in each one and do it like that. Like that. That's
like you do with Goldberg.
Right. I would sign. I would put Punk down for something like that. Yes. Yes. He definitely could do that. Right. Okay. Absolutely. I would agree with
who
that.
Who would you put him in the ring with, though? Who would you have him feud with?
There's a lot of people you could put
Roman, Rollins, Cody,
with Seth.
Tons of guys. Yeah.
Yeah, they got all talent.
I mean, look at all that's the guys at Goldberg wrestling. How many guys at Goldberg come back for a month and wrestle?
It's a very dumb question.
No, Conan, I'm not saying that I don't know who to put him in with. I'm saying, but who would you pick out of that long list?
Bro, pick, there's like 10 guys.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
Owens, Sammy.
It wouldn't be Lee Moriarty or motherfucking, Pete Dunne.
Riddle
and Punk.
Yeah, the UFC thing.
Yeah,
you know,
it wouldn't be against Mustafa Ali.
Right.
You know? Yeah.
Next is from John Flynn, and the subject is Snowflakes wanting more classic wrestling on Peacock WWE Network. Why on earth would woke snowflakes like the Bixons fans of the world want more classic wrestling footage on the network? It's filled with everything they supposedly hate. So old un-PC angles, offensive gimmicks, and language are okay to watch on the network? The cry of Moolah is currently mentioned. Just proves they really aren't that offended and fake outrage. Thanks, John. That's a good point. It's
why do these guys?
Do you know what this guy's talking about?
I have no clue.
Okay, so Bixon's fan, I guess. I don't know if it sounds like they want more classic footage on the WWE Network.
Right.
But the classic footage all has to be scrubbed because it was a lot of the shit was offensive for the stuff today.
Right,
like you couldn't even do some of the gimmicks.
Right,
no.
So he says these woke guys today talk about wanting all these old gimmicks that are offensive back on the show seems hypocritical, is what this guy's trying to say. You know,
yeah, makes sense.
Yeah.
How about you, Joe? What do you think about that?
I mean, I'd love to see more old stuff, more old Memphis, more old UWF.
How much time do you have on your hands?
Not much at all.
That's what
but
I'm
I mean,
saying.
if I had the time, I would put that on. You know?
Right. Yeah, I like the old shows because you know you hear how they thought, how they talked. There's words that you used back then that you can't use now. Why would you want to scrub that? That's part of history.
Right. Yeah,
but you have to because if they put on the network, Peacock has already done it with a bunch of shit.
That's stupid.
You know? Yeah. So next is some Ryan Bendick, and the subject is Juice or Teddy. Hey guys, who do you think ruined their shot at being a real star in major wrestling organizations? Hoovy or Teddy Hart? Both at one point were awesome wrestlers, but they always seemed to ruin a good thing they had or was coming. With all the BS and problems they caused aside, what do you think would have been a bigger star? Thanks. That's a question for you, Conan, because like Hoovy didn't really ruin anything. He was a star, and during the period, Teddy never got to that level that Hoovy did. Right. Hoovy was a real big star. You know, he was one of the best
in the States,
during a period of time when the ratings were through the roof. You know, so it's like he had a run. You know,
right.
Teddy never had the run.
Right.
So, yeah. But that's still the question, though. Who do you think ruined the thing more? Did Hoovy ruin both?
Both.
It's like a tie, right?
Bro, I fired both of them four times.
Let me ask you a question. When you fire the guy, what is the conversation like? And is it face-to-face or is it over the phone?
It's face-to-face, and it's always them not understanding why, giving me a million excuses, most of them that people are jealous of them, not assimilating the truth, not being honest with themselves, and we end up having heat for years.
Right.
Because they think it's me being personal.
So can you recall and give us like one of the conversations, the last time you fired Teddy, what'd you say to him?
Okay, dude, you're showing up to the shows and nobody can find you. Where are you? Oh, I had to go to the gym. You have to tell people. You just can't fucking leave the fucking show. I heard that you changed the finish. Why would you do that? Oh, you know, I thought that's what you wanted. That's not what I wanted. I heard you were fucking rude. No, God, I would never be rude. You know, and so anything that you tell him, he's oblivious. Right. You know, this girl complained that you said this. So I didn't say it. You know, so he never wanted to take accountability for anything. He was always late. He was always bullshitting me. And he was mega talented, but you know, that's kind of like our, that was kind of our last conversation. Well, I can no longer use you.
And that's it. That's the firing words, right? I can no longer use you. And then what does he say?
Oh, come on, man. You know, it's not that bad. I go, yes, it is, bro. This is not the first time. This is not the second time. I've tried to help you out. You know, I do shit for you and you're not fucking appreciative and you do shit behind my back. And so we end up not talking for a year or two. It boils over. He calls me back. I've changed. I'm not the same guy. I'll give you a cat, you know,
I'll give you a cat.
You know, I'll be at a show in 2 weeks at the ECW Arena that Hoovy's going to be at. It's like an ECW tribute show, Hoovy versus Super Crazy. But should I get a drop for the show from Hoovy? Do you think he would do it?
He probably would because he wants to try and get back on the show, I imagine.
Yeah.
Mm. Okay. I'll give it a shot.
All right.
I'm surprised that you're actually getting a drop, but yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to get a bunch.
All right. So the next one is from Robinson Evans.
Right.
The subject, Dear K-100, Dear Conan and Disco and Joe. Sasha and Jericho is the subject.
Right.
According to Jericho, he says it's a money issue with Sasha. Isn't it always a money issue with her? Has she ever finished a 2 or 5 year contract without drama, aka walking out or wanting to quit? If they're in negotiations, should WWE add this to their contract that she can't ask for any kind of raise until she fulfills a 3 year contract completed unless injury is involved? Should they also put in the contract that she would also have to pay back money for breach of contract? I'm a Sasha fan, but this is a recurring issue that happens with her, and you want to make sure that she's worth money, worth the money she's asking for. And if she believes she deserves it, then you as a company would need bolt block agreements on their end. What is your opinion on this? Thank you, Robinson Evans. We mentioned this in the podcast last week that Conan had some insider information because Sasha was training with Hoovy in Mexico, and we found out that Sasha is probably not coming back to wrestling this year because she has other projects to work on, which would be a money issue because she's probably got a project that she's probably making a lot of money. It doesn't have to get hurt.
Right. She's filming a movie.
Right. So yeah. So it is a money issue because she's doing something that's paying her more money. So I guess, or maybe even less money, but less averse to injury. Right. So,
but I would agree with what this guy says, just like CM Punk caveat emptor, you know, put it in the contract, like an injury angle, you know, just like they did to Ray when Ray got hurt. And he left. They were like, oh, no, you still owe us like 5 months because you were out 5 months. And he was like, what?
Yeah. Next one's from Ryan Evans. And the subject is a question about Bo Jackson. What do you think Bo Jackson's numbers would have been if not for the injury in both baseball and football? First dual sport Hall of Famer? Thanks for the content. And that's from Ryan. Oh, absolutely. He was one of the best. He's arguably at the period of time he was alive, or not alive, but performing, he was probably the best athlete on the planet Earth.
Right.
You know, he was an all-star in baseball and an all-pro in football. Just think about that. You know, that's
bro,
like,
not that's just what, that. Yeah, bro, yeah. He won the Heisman Trophy.
Right.
And before Jordan, there was Bo. Remember Bo Knows?
Yeah, Bo Knows. Yeah.
He was drafted by the Yankees. He's got the fastest 100-time 40-yard dash ever at the NFL Combine.
Right.
He was a track and field star. Right. And he was a beast in Auburn, and the guy was like 6 feet, 240 pounds. The guy was a fucking beast.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah.
What was it? I was a kid when he was around, so I don't remember like that much. Was he better? I remember him as a Raider, but was he better at baseball or football?
It's just arguable. He would clobber home runs.
Bro.
Yeah.
This is how great of an athlete he was, Joe. Mm-hmm. When he was in college, he was on track. He was a hurdler. He was a sprinter. He had national times. The guy was just a freak athlete. You know how there's always that freak athlete in your school that's quicker and bigger than everybody, and you're like,
mm-hmm, you can do everything.
What the fuck? That was him.
Joe, I'm sending you a clip right now. I want you to play this. This shows you how good this guy was. Okay. This is one play. I mean, he has tons of, you know, home runs in baseball, they're just monsters. Like, he has one of Nolan Ryan that goes almost like 500 feet. It's like ridiculous. Right.
And he went to the All-Star game in baseball, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah. He was one of the best players in the league. Okay, so play this. That's a YouTube clip, so I hope it works. Because not only was he like one of the best hitters in the league, one of the fastest guys in the league, he was one of the best fielders. Yep. He was like, bro, the guy's like this. He's like the best athlete. He's like the best athlete in baseball and the best athlete in pro football. He's the best athlete on planet Earth.
Shame what happened to him.
Yeah. What was it? A hip
make,
problem?
Make it bigger. Make this bigger.
Yeah, he dislocated his hip in a football game, popped it back in.
Footing underneath. I mentioned earlier, Reynolds has been caught far too often in his career. Five times this season he's been thrown out at second base. Line drive toward the corner and left.
Watch where he throws him out from.
Jackson to try to stop Reynolds from scoring. He can't do it. Yes, he can. I don't believe it. He made an absolute perfect throw. It looked like there was no way he was going to get it. Because Didier still doesn't think he had the throw there. I can't believe it.
So, just to reiterate, if you're watching Nate. No, play. Keep playing. I think the show the replay here. Just show you how unbelievable it is.
He just turned and launched. The umpires are way out of position. Ken Kaiser is the third base umpire. He goes down to the left field corner. They're supposed to rotate. The home plate umpire then goes to third to make sure they tag up there. The first base umpire never came to home plate. We're going to get another look at it. There's your home plate umpire. That's not his call. Here's Reynolds coming around third. Kaiser's out in left field. Reynolds runs by the home plate umpire.
Sure, sure. He's literally no umpire. From the
first base umpire is supposed to be there. It's just Boone and Reynolds.
No, oh, he got his foot
in the area.
He threw it from
and
the warning
plate
track.
Umpire has to third base.
Right, and hit the catcher. It was a perfect strike to the catcher. From like, you know, it'd be the equivalent like a football player sort of pass like 90 yards in the air, or like a perfect strike. So that's how
a
good
rope.
The guy. Yeah, that's how good the guy was.
Yeah, he's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Hey, Mel, Bri here. Got to work from home today because the whole family caught a nasty.
Daddy.
Hey, Mikey, if you're going to puke, find the popcorn bowl.
But my availability is 110%. Coincidentally, so is my fever. Kidding. Mel, I'm so cold but hot. But I'm going to get you that budget. Just as soon as...
Mikey! Popcorn bowl!
Press 1 to use Instacart and get your family's sick day essentials delivered in as fast as 30 minutes. Press 2 to keep working. Do not press 2. Just use Instacart, Brian.
So next is from our boy Adam Des Moines, who got me heat with Tony Schiavone.
Of course.
Subject is Double J, Double Agent. The Great Disco Inferno, the greatest WCW is Jeff Jarrett acting as a double agent to try and recruit AEW bums over to his and Conrad's Pro Wrestling Federation or Global Force 2.0. It's just odd to me that Jeff is in AEW at the same time Conrad is trying to infiltrate AAA to sway talent over from there. That's an interesting allegation. I don't. At the same time, Conrad and Jarrett are partying with Nick Aldis to promote some Australian wrestling show. Is this some sort of wrestling conspiracy? I mean, Nick was the first Global Force Wrestling champion before it went under. And what's the new federation going to be called? Ad Free Wrestling? Sponsored by some dick pill business? P.S. Disco, thanks for being on timeout again because you literally have saved Vince's programming. Joe didn't have that bum Binham. Joe, don't have that bum Binhamin on again.
Oh, that's
so he's
terrible. Getting,
yeah, he was Binhamin.
Yeah.
Jeff is not trying to be a double agent. Jeff just likes Jeff will work until he drops dead. Like he's like Nash. You know, these guys are like workaholics. They're always, you know, Nash is always doing autograph signings and stuff. You know, like these guys are just addicted to work. You know,
that's
all Jeff does. He's a hustler. He's a pro wrestler. He's like, you know, he's timeless. I mean, Jeff's my age. I mean, I think he's older than me. And here he is, like doing a pretty good character on TV. He's like the Last Outlaw and stuff. And he's like, bro, the guy knows what he's doing. You know, he's not a double age or anything. He's just still working. You know, so because he's a very smart guy. So you got a comment on this, Conan?
Yeah, Joe. Yes, I would agree with everything you just said. And he, you know, he likes money, and he's got kids, and he loves the business, and he loves, like, you know, he loves everything about it. And I love working with Jeff. People always bury me. Oh, why you bring Jeff? He doesn't do anything, bro. Jeff's always, anything you tell him to do, he does it to the best of his ability. And if Karen is on a board, that's even better.
Yeah.
I love working with Jeff.
Jeff is very, like, if you bring Jeff in for a show, he's very, especially since he's gone to rehab, you know, because when he was drinking, he was having problems, right? But he, very professional. And he's in one of his
history. And there's nothing he doesn't know how to do. You can have him age in a match. You can have him put together a match. You can have him come up with ideas. You can have him book. You can have him produce.
You can have him wrestle. You can have him do commentary. Just like he does everything, you know? Next is from Leslie Sincere, and the subject is setting a precedent. What's up, Conan Disco? Here's a crazy coincidence. 20 years ago, Stone Cold Steve Austin walked down the WWE due to not being happy with creative. After being gone for over 6 months with help from good old JR, Austin was able to make amends with Vince, but not without a hefty fine. Initially, Vince wanted to fine Austin $650,000, but reduced it to $250,000. Sasha and Naomi do the same thing two decades later for similar reasons and are in talks to return by next year. My question is, if you were in Hunter's shoes, would you set a precedent for Sasha and Naomi before they return back on television in order to prevent any other walkouts from ever happening or risk losing Sasha and possibly Naomi to another company? Thanks in advance, and that's from your boy Les. 20 years ago, it was way different because, the independent contractor question is a thing these days now. So I don't think you can find these girls. That's like, how do you find an independent contractor? That's kind of weird, like today, because they did it back in the day, but I don't think that's something they would do today. Right. What do you think? So I would not find them because I don't think they can. But maybe I would find them,
Actually, they wouldn't put up with it today.
Kept them off TV and they're not paying them. Isn't that a fine in itself?
Yeah, so. But they wouldn't put up with that shit. Yeah.
Right.
And they shouldn't have to.
Right. Next is from Bill Wilde, and the subject is "Don't Piss Me Off, Slap Nuts." Good morning, K100 crew, and Feliz Navidados to all. Perhaps this idea is ridiculous, but given the weekly television offered by AEW, maybe not. Why doesn't Jeff Jarrett review the "Don't Piss Me Off, Slap Nuts" gimmick from late 90s WCW? The whole catchphrase kind of got lost in over-the-top antics of that era, but it's undoubtedly funny to just utter the phrase "slap nuts." My question is, in your opinion, who are the most ridiculous catchphrases or gimmicks that got over in the history of pro wrestling? Did any fly under the radar that you thought should have gotten over or that you all secretly thought were funny AF? Thanks for your thoughts, and that's Wild Bill from Spring Hill, Florida. I always like, Big Papa Pump is your hookup. Holler if you hear me. To all my freaks out there, what was the other one? But bro, WCW, back in the day, people had tons of catchphrases. Stone Cold and The Rock.
I always thought that was weird, Steiner saying that, because he didn't really talk like that.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
It's all my freaks out there. Big Papa Pump is your hookup. Holler if you hear.
Right. He didn't talk.
That's the number one right there, because that was absurd, because if you knew Scott Steiner, he would never talk like that, right?
Right.
Conan, guess what?
What'd it do?
It's never too early to play holiday music. Deck the halls with Manscaped products. Fa la 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 la. It's never too early to start thinking about gifts. Whether it's for a friend or the friends in your pants, you can make this a season to be jolly with Manscaped. Do your little drummer boy a favor and use a Lawnmower 4.0 to avoid another silent night in the bedroom. Then add in Manscaped's top-of-the-line shower products to have the people thinking, all I want for Christmas is you. Santa cares about his sack, and so should you, Conan. Look nice when you get naughty by going to manscaped.com and using code K100 for free shipping and 20% off. Now, Manscaped is our favorite product, and they've been one of our advertisers for years.
Yeah.
The Manscaped Platinum Package 4.0, this is the best thing, is the one-stop shop for the man who deserves it all. It has everything needed to help you deck the halls from face to balls just in time for mistletoe season. And the Platinum Package has each product from the best-selling Performance Package Plus: Ultra Premium Body Wash, Ultra Premium 2-in-1 Shampoo and Conditioner, and Ultra Premium Deodorant. It's the best way to smell fresh from your Santa hat to your candy cane. The Lawnmower 4.0 Body Trimmer, the Weed Whacker Nose and Ear Hair Trimmer feature proprietary advanced skin-safe technology to protect your delicate presence. Plus, both are waterproof, so there's no issue clearing the snow out of your driveway. There's also a 4,000K LED light on it, so you can light the way like Rudolph the Red Nose. Do you think that people calling me Rudolph when I was a kid because I had a big nose is body shaming?
No.
Now that you've groomed your candy cane, it's time to make sure you don't smell like a reindeer with the Platinum Package shower products. All of Manscaped shower gear is sulfate-free, vegan, and made to have your skin feeling hydrated and smelling fresh. But smelling good doesn't stop at the shower. The Crop Preserver Ball Deodorant and One Crop Reviver Ball Toner can solve stank problems all day long. Joey, you should be interested in that.
Absolutely.
And once they touch your sack, you'll never go back. The Platinum Package 4.0 is sitting under the tree and is guaranteed to put anyone in the holiday spirit. And for the perfect stocking stuffer, add in the brand new body buffer, an incredible body scrubber that makes exfoliating easy and a lot cleaner than an old loofah. So basically, you get the shampoo, conditioner, everything. They give you everything you need. You don't need anything else, soap included. So get 20% off and free shipping with the code K100 at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com and use code K100. That's M-A-N-S-E-A-P-E-D.com and K100. Get your jingle balls. ready for the holidays.
Without a doubt, and I've said this before, and I think Disco agrees with me, and I just ordered half a dozen. Probably the most comfortable boxers I've ever worn in my life. They're these black boxer briefs that are really sweet.
Yes.
So, bro, they take care of you, man. They really do take care of you. It's worth it. You know, order it. Stay clean. Be hygienic. Everything at manscaped.com. Happy holidays. Boom.
Next is from Crappy King Dre, and the subject is Conan was right. Hello, Keeping 100 crew. I find this skeptical.
Already you don't like it.
A few weeks ago, I heard Meltzer's criticize AEW. Dave tweeted this week, 11/30/22 episode of Dynamite had the lowest ever 18-49 demo on a pose. Conan is right about Dave's criticism of AEW. Do you think Dave's frustrated of trying to distance himself from AEW? Here's the link. It just shows that we see this. He shows the link of the thing. And thanks and keep it 100. I've said repeatedly, Dave does criticize AEW.
Where's the link?
I just had it up. Hang on. There you go.
Well, it's just a tweet.
Yeah, it's
okay. I can't see anything.
Joe, read the tweet. Yeah, I can't see it either.
It says AEW did 870,000, 0.26, lowest ever in 18-49 on an unopposed Wednesday, and that was from December 1st.
Yeah, but that doesn't really tell the story because Dave was talking. Dave actually, let me tell you, Dave made a comment the other day about the Joe, pull up the comment he made about the segment with Regal and MJF and about how pull that up because he tweeted that and then he tweeted this out or he actually was on his show talking about this.
The quote here is Dave Meltzer on Wrestling Observer Radio said, "When it was all over, I was just like, what was the purpose of this? Put so much heat on a guy who is leaving," in parentheses says William Regal. "Moxley gets no revenge at all. MJF is turning heel on a guy who is a heel, so the fans are so mixed up."
Yeah.
Great question. That's the same thing I thought.
I retweeted that and tweeted, yep, you know, me too. It's like, everybody was thinking the same thing. It's like, what's going on here, right? Yeah.
Right.
All right, so the next one is from, let me see.
Jared
Aviotti gave this too, so he gets suspension anyway. So,
yep.
Oh, but this was from November 30th, so maybe he this was last week, but this does get a suspension.
Mm-hmm.
No, but you know what though? Tell him this, okay? I'm gonna tell Jared Aviotti this. If you tweet, I'll lift the suspension, okay? Because you doubled up this week, but next week you can have a submission if you post the L for saying you were wrong about Liv Morgan turning heel in that email, right? So the subject is DDP playing out matches. Hi, K100 fam. Glad you're back, Conan, and hopefully on the road to doing much better moving forward. I wanted to ask you about Diamond Dallas Page's old reputation from back in the WCW days of planning out every spot or most spots in his matches. I know Ric Flair was notoriously with someone who was critical of Page for being a meticulous planner in his matches. My question for the crew is, was working with DDP back in WCW difficult? Did he plan close to every spot in a match with you? And did you notice any animosity between Flair and DDP in the locker room because of the difference in philosophies? Thank you, and then from Bess is Jared. They weren't to each other, but Rick would throw side. He'd bury Page every once in a while. And Page had this, Page liked to go over move for move. But when on TV, like when I worked him, and maybe when Conan worked him, stuff, we had like a 6 or 7 minute match. So that didn't take too long. It wasn't, we knew all new. It's like, you knew what you were going to do. It wasn't like the thing. But then he went to WWE and he was going to be wrestling with Taker. And he had a match like written out on paper. Hunter told him, do not show that to Taker. Showed it to Taker anyway. And the famous story is Taker saw it, crumbled it up and threw it in the garbage. Okay. Because like these old school guys were like wanted their match written down top to bottom. And Paige didn't get that, so.
I remember very vividly Benoit telling me, can you believe this guy? He handed me a letter, like the moves he wanted me to do. And I was like, and what do you do? He goes, fuck that,
Yeah, you think you're right. You don't hand a guy a piece of paper the match.
A great worker.
And telling him is like, hey, here's what I want you to do to me.
Right.
It's just like you just don't do that, right?
Right.
They say, I mean, maybe he didn't do it all the time or just for big matches, but Savage supposedly really wrote things out like that, especially the match with Steamboat's the famous one. But you'd have to imagine Savage and Page had such good matches because they had probably
that.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Savage? Yeah, supposedly. Yeah.
No, he didn't. Savage was like, Savage, because Ric Flair says this, Ric Flair says, you know, I heard him, it's either on his podcast or something, it's like, if you want to compare, you know, there's 2 5-star matches, okay, that Savage, that Ricky Steamboat had.
Yeah.
One against Flair, it's at WrestleMania 3, and maybe Chi-Town Rumble, maybe 2 5-star matches with Ricky Steamboat.
Yeah.
And so Flair like says, go, you want to know which match is better? How about the, you know, hit a 5-star match with
Steamboat.
My 5-star match, we called it in the ring.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's like one was written down and we worked with me. We called it out. We called it out in the ring, you know?
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
That's news to me. I didn't know that.
Yeah. That's
and he had Steamboat practice the match with him too. Savage did. They would practice.
Yeah. They practice it. And Flair went out there with a 5. It's like, think about that. It's like Flair, like Macho Man's probably telling Flair, if I have a better worker than you, it's like, all right. It's like, they ain't gonna go practice everything to have a 5-star match. Ric Flair just shows up, walks out to the ring, let's call it out here.
Right.
5-star match. That's how good the guy is, yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Next is from Brendan Triano on the subject is AEW storytelling. The mayor of K100 is here, and I need to address some foolishness going on with AEW, specifically the world championship storyline. MJF got people to sympathize with him over that rejection email he got. Okay, fine. It was a fake babyface turn with Regal turn on Mox at the pay-per-view. Okay, fine. The first show after big pay-per-view, Regal says MJF won't be there or speak until next week. Channel changer. MJF is on this week and gloats as he should and then assassinates Regal over the email that turned MJF face. Bruh. Were we supposed to boo him now for getting his long-awaited revenge after we just cheered him for his reasoning to want revenge in the first place? Why did Regal turn on Moxley? We won't hear from Regal anytime soon since he got deleted by MJF. The plot holes are gigantic in my opinion. And what is this garbage? I will say the announcers played off Regal being attacked very well, but that's mostly Taz being top-notch at his job. P.S. Conan, you were a tough dude and wish you well. Disco got put in the hospital once playing peekaboo. They sent him to the ICU. Let's suspend this guy for that terrible joke there at the end for 1 week.
Yeah.
No, we just talked about the MJF storyline. Didn't make any sense. Right. But
to play devil's advocate...
You know what, let me tell you what would be terrible. Is if MJF does go back to WWE in 2024, and he does get, and he ends up in him and Regal, and they make it look like they swerved AEW the whole time or something. You know, go ahead.
Now, I was going to say, to play devil's advocate, I mean, obviously everybody can poke holes in what happened there, but if there was a situation where it was like, oh shit, Regal gave his notice, then they had to adapt, and it sucks. But
still, you couldn't come up with anything better than that,
right?
Yeah, that's true. I guess you're
a great short story writer. Hey, some guy thinks you should be writing for heels. Is that what you would write?
No, I would have.
They wanted to stretch him out. You know,
Regal's leaving, so that's the only thing we can do, bro. That was so convoluted and stupid.
Do the exact same angle, but Moxie's the one that takes Regal out.
Absolutely, Moxie gets
revenge. It was that simple. You know, there was no reason to put heat on MJF doing that. It's like it made no sense.
It didn't. No,
right. Next is from Easton Axe Wound, and the subject is Adam Cole. Guys, either of you guys have any form of inside news on what's going on with Adam Cole? I just asked because I saw him appear on a YouTube channel called Credo. He wasn't talking wrestling, mostly just video game stuff, but I gotta be honest with you. He looked like shit. He looked heavy. He was crazy pale, and he looked way, way older than he did just a few months ago when he was last seen on AEW. Have you guys heard anything about an injury or, God forbid, some type of illness going on? Yes, I actually did hear – I listened to a clip – with Alvarez and Meltzer, and I think they said that the Cole's injury was bad, and they don't know if he's coming back. Okay, like he may be done because of that concussion.
I met him in WrestleMania, and he was a great guy, and I'm going to see if we can get him on the podcast.
Cool. Mm-hmm. The next is from Lee Glassman, and the subject is mailbag question. Kurt Angle and Iron Sheik real life heat. Oh, this is interesting. Greetings, fellas, and it's Lee Glassman coming from Louisiana towns. Unlike Billy Body, who was in his penthouse in a Mayfair, I have a small 2-bedroom flat in Hempstead. I recently fell down the YouTube hole and found the Kurt Angle Howard Stern interview. When Howard ambushes Kurt Angle with a phone call from the Iron Sheik, who for the next 4 minutes screams at the phone at Kurt Angle, calling him all the slurs in the dictionary. My question is, where does the real heat come from? Is it from Kurt's time in WWE, or is it from Iran versus USA Olympics? Adding on to this, do you think that both in their prime would create an entertaining match that would create revenue? That's keep up the good work, your pal, Lee from London Town. First of all, if they did that, I guarantee you it was a work.
Yeah, everything she did at that time was a work, especially the Stern stuff.
Right, because you would just get the Sheik on and he would be the motherfucker. You're having him on just to do his shtick.
And like he was like, doing the shoot interviews. Yeah.
Exactly, right. So it was like, Did you know about that comedian?
And it's Howard Stern.
Right. Old, of course. It's a shock jock shit. Right.
Yeah, exactly. This is shtick, and this is really the brainchild of the Megan twins. Remember them from Toronto?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And every time Sheik would appear on Stern, he would have Eric Sims and Rob Feinstein with him. I remember that.
What, really? Yeah. Eric Sims would go in there with him?
Yeah, Sims was Eric Sims always, was, yeah. Sims always with the Sheik.
Brings you up to New York and drives you around and stuff. You know, mm-hmm. I like Eric. He brought me to actually Spumoni's Italian Garden, too, which I heard. Anyway, if any New Yorkers out there, right? Spumoni's Italian Garden, overrated. All right, overrated. I know I'm going to get heat for this and everything. And I actually mentioned this on Twitter to Joey Janela. I got heat. I was not impressed with Spumoni's Italian Garden being the quote unquote best pizza in New York. It wasn't even close.
How about Lombardi's?
Well, I didn't go to Lombardi's. I just went to Spumoni's because I heard. Like my old roommate told me, hey, go to Spumoni's. Go to, hey, how's Spumoni's? Oh, Spumoni's. I go to Spumoni's, overrated. Next from Tad J, and the subject is Kevin Gill Bewilderment. Hey, K100 crew. T. Jones from H-Town here. Longtime listener for the last 2 years, but lots of old episodes I've never heard. I started going back and listening to the other stuff, and I have to ask Conan, Disco, and JoJo as well to hear any explanation of how Kevin Gill would even be considered for the show. Seriously, by listening to his voice, I cringe. Every joke is terrible, and the list goes on. From what I hear in episode one, it was through Jericho that he was involved in from the beginning. That's not true, okay? Can anyone explain how he became involved and what the thought process was? I'm not in the industry, so I don't know how hard it is to find capable audio producers, but listening to KG is worse than Get My Go Marathon on an infinite repeat in my ears. P.S. KG makes JoJo look like the Picasso of audio production. I'm going to just say one thing here, and Conan can elaborate on it. Okay, you know, May's soul rest in peace. But this was 100% a Scott Hall error, right? So, Conan, you can elaborate on that.
So, basically what had happened is I was working with Court Bauer for MLW.
Yeah.
And I wanted to get Disco on the show to do a segment with me. And so they didn't. They just wanted him as a guest every now and then. So Jericho heard the show because Don Callis heard me on fucking Jericho's show.
Mm-hmm.
Jericho started his own podcast and he had me on, and Don Callis heard me and he was like, why don't you have Conan have his own show? And Jericho called me up and he says, hey, would you like to, you know, I'm going to start my own fucking thing. Mm-hmm. And I said, cool. And I said, can I bring Court and MSL? He goes, well, I'm not really interested in them. And I was like, well, you know, I'd feel more comfortable if they were with me. So I talked to Court, I talked to MSL, and they didn't want to come. So I had no host and I had nobody to produce the show. So I reached out to Shane Helms and then I reached out to Disco. And then I was like, okay, who's going to produce the show? And KG used to hit me up on Twitter, much like Joe did, every single fucking day. Hey, you know, when you're going to have me on the show? I have my own podcast and whoop-de-whoop and all this other shit. And so I saw him in WrestleMania and I saw that he had his own show and he had his own equipment. And without, you know, checking or doing my due diligence, I said, hey, I'm going to start a new podcast. Would you like to fucking produce it? And he said, yeah. Half the show, he would have other people fucking produce it.
Wait a second. I got to cut you off. I thought you told me you got recommended by Scott Hall.
No.
100%. Well, no. Bro, I can't even, you absolutely.
Yeah, no, I think you said Scott before Hall, you. Yeah, Scott put him over to you or something like that.
Yeah, Scott put him over to you or something. Like you got maybe not recommended him, but.
He probably said something like, ask Scott about me, you know, or something. And Scott said, yeah, he's cool.
Mm-hmm. There anyway, was an endorsement from Scott Hall in this story. That's right. I think me and Joe agree. Okay.
Right. So. Jericho's like, okay, you know, we're going to start the show soon. You got to have a show. And so I said, all right, I got Disco and I got Shane and I got a producer called KG. And he was like, all right. And that's what we started out with. Little did I know that he turned out to be a bitch made snowflake and he got emasculated on almost every show, which was hilarious. And is worth just the price of Patreon to listen how he got emasculated by myself, then Disco, then Lance, and then Lord Cyrus. Classic.
Right. And that was featured in a rehash episode too, where I put all the segments of his meltdown back to back.
And then at that time, Joe was a listener, and I was like, I got to get rid of this fucking guy. You know, and I was like, nothing can be as bad as this guy, and I need to get rid of this fucking guy. So I slowly brought Joe in. If you remember, for a while, we had four guys on the show.
Mm-hmm.
So he was kind of helping produce until he finally got mad when I brought Dave Crist on, who totally exposed him, and he quit. And that's when
no show, no call.
Right.
To this day.
And that's when I told Joe, you know what? You want to take over? And he said, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Next is from Ben. The subject is very disrespectful. What's up, Disco? On the latest episode of Flair's podcast, he said, you don't get to have an opinion on whether someone knows how to get over or not. He said he loves you, but I found this very disrespectful. What is your response to this great injustice? So he was referencing that Conrad had asked Rick, the tweet that I made that says 95% of wrestlers today have no clue how to get over. And he asked Rick Flair about it. And Rick said, Disco doesn't get to have an opinion on whether someone knows how to get over or not. And I would like, for coming from Ric Flair, I would not be offended by that because, like, Ric Flair was far more over than I was. And, like, so there's different levels there, right? But my take would be on this would be, bro, I worked with all the guys that knew how to get over because we were over huge back in the day. And I know I see what the guys today are doing. 95% of them don't know how to get over. Right. You know, and that's – so I think if you explain Ric that way, that I think I'm saying these guys know how to go because I worked with the Ric Flairs and the Hogans and the Halls and that. Like, I worked with all these guys. I think you'd probably have a different take on that, you know. But when I made that comment, I wasn't saying, like, look, I know how to get over, but, you know, like more than these guys. Like, no, I've worked with guys that know how to get over. I've seen what they did. It's all there for everybody to see. If you go back in the archives on the WWE Network and look at the shows and watch what these guys do to see what they did to get over, and people just don't do it today, you know? So we could have a long discussion on that and what it is that the wrestlers don't do today to get over. And my immediate thing would be, bro, you concentrate way too much on the work in the match. And you guys start working on character, interviews, promos, facials, and selling, right? And that's 95% of the people. Those five tools right there, 5% of them have all that figured out. Right? 95% do not. Would you agree with that math, Cody?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Next is from James Musgrove, and the subject is people who think Elon Musk is funny. We all have a snarky asshole, and we can respect someone who makes a lot of money. But why do rich snarky assholes who don't seem to like anyone have personality cults rooting for them to own people online? As far as Elon Musk goes, I don't care one way or another. I'll still use Twitter when I shit, and that's all I've ever been good for. And I'd argue that it's the same experience as it was 6 months ago, minus people's reactions. I'll agree with that. Disco, you retweeted several Musk lame jokes over the past few weeks. You're not part of the Musk cult that seemed to be amused by his office boy jokes. Please tell me you don't actually think that twerp is funny. I think some of his tweets are funny, which is why I tweet them. I mean, not all of them are, but, you know, the guy owns the site, and here he is, the richest guy in the world, you know, trying to get people in space or anything. And here he is on social media, like, you know, just playing around with it. And, like, he bought it and he's having fun with it and stuff. And like, the previous owner, Jack, bro, the guy was the most boring. He's boring. Like, he'd tweet, like, this would be a tweet from, like, this is a guy that owns Twitter. Elon Musk is on there every day, joking, laughing at people, trolling people. You know, he's having fun. Jack would tweet, hashtag Bitcoin. And that'd be, like, his only tweet for, like, 2 weeks. You know, so it's like, you know, I'd definitely say he's better than the previous owner. What do you think, Conan?
So this guy doesn't like Elon Musk? Is that what you're saying? Elon Musk.
Right. Apparently not.
Okay, so let me see if I got this right. This is a guy who founded SpaceX, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is like, you know, they're sending reusable rockets up in space. You know, it's like space transport. Right. This is a guy who founded an electric vehicles, Tesla, okay? This is a guy who found an artificial intelligence company, OpenAI or whatever the fuck it's called. This is a guy who found that other company. What's it called? The neurotechnology company?
Neuralink,
mm-hmm. which is brain-computer interface.
Right.
Okay? This is a guy who's proposing from Las Vegas a Hyperloop high-speed transportation system. One of the richest guys in the world, and he smokes weed and goes on Rogan and does Saturday Night Live. I love this guy. He's a guy I'd love to talk with.
Right. And he's obviously a genius.
Right.
It's like, you know,
you're a fucking nobody. Who the fuck is this guy? James who?
Bro, people just
Musgrove.
Right. You know, They like to chop people's legs off to make themselves feel taller. You know, it's just like crazy. Joe, I'm going to send you something here real quick. Okay. Mm-hmm. I want you to pull it up and agree, if you agree with this, Conan and Joe, this is a great tweet. Right. Pull that up and show it. I think it looks almost exactly like the description this guy says.
That's great.
Yeah, he does look like Macaulay Culkin playing Jeffrey Dahmer.
Yeah, that's great. That is.
He looked exactly like Macaulay Culkin playing Jeffrey Dahmer. Yeah. If you said that, right?
Yeah.
Because he does look like a lot like Macaulay Culkin there.
Yeah, you know? He does.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right. And Jeffrey Dahmer.
Right.
A cleaner version. Yeah.
Right. Next is from. There's two more left. Mm-hmm. Jorge Para. Subject is mailbag. Hey guys, George from Vegas here. Khan and the AEW neckbeards continue to say that they're the closest competition to WWE since the demise of WCW. That is not only inaccurate, but damn right disrespectful to TNA. TNA played its role accordingly. They had good storylines, grew their own home talent, which can be seen all over the industry now. AJ, Joe, Kassarian, etc. used the legends to build up their show and help the young talent. Am I correct in saying that money and budgets aside, TNA was far superior to AEW and the neckbeards that bashed WWE? P.S. I think it's hilarious that people hate WWE and mark up for AEW and 90% of the roster is made up of the whiners that left or got fired by WWE.
Well, if you went by TV ratings, D.I., TNA Impact constantly had over 1 million viewers. They went over 2 million. Yeah,
but WWE at the time was doing like 3 and 4.
Everybody's numbers were up. Yeah.
Right. But
compared to now.
AEW is definitely closer competition because TNA tried to go head to head with WWE on Monday night and got demolished.
And AEW's had big buy rates and sold out big arenas and stuff like that. Right.
No, I would disagree. I'd definitely say that. And plus AEW's, they compete for free agents. You know, TNA could not compete with WWE for free agents. You know, if WWE let somebody go or like they didn't want somebody, they'd get rid of them. TNA would pick them up. But right now it's like, if there's free agents and WWE wants them, it's like AEW might be able to get them too, but back then, forget it. If WWE wanted somebody, Impact would not be able to compete. It's definitely, that's you're way off on that, kid, whoever this guy was. Would you agree to that, Conan?
Okay, I worked there for a lot of years, and I would say that their biggest problem was, you know, talent wise, they had a great talent. If Dixie Carter, if it would have been somebody else and not Dixie, because it doesn't matter how much money you have if you don't know what you're doing. Mm-hmm. They would have had somebody else besides Dixie Carter. That company would have been profitable.
Yeah. Next is from John Kamepa, and the subject is Tony Khan and Roman Reigns. Disco and Conan, you guys have said for nearly 2 years on the show, but how well 2 years on the show, but how well the slow evolving storyline of the Bloodlines has been booked and how well it's been done. So my question for you three guys is this: how do you think the Bloodline storyline would turn out if Tony Khan was booking? By the way, guys, I love your YouTube clips, but right now, literally as I type this, Billy's in the comment section rambling and threatening people because they're laughing at his Air Force talking. Please don't let him go on and on about this on the show when you have him on the next. He's dull enough without trashing us all again. Nice. I think this is hysterical that he's – bro, he's triggering the marks in the comment section. It's funny to me that everybody's like – that he's getting triggered and he's triggering the people that he's getting triggered by.
But I mean, you guys have said, you know, Billy, how can you expect to have listeners and have people like you and respect you when all you do is insult them and he's still doing it in the comments?
That's great. Oh my God. So, how would the Bloodline storyline turn out? Well, they wouldn't be on every week. And if they had a backstage segment, it'd be like 45 seconds talking about their, you know, the match on Rampage Friday, you know?
And Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn would have a best of 7 series.
Who knows how Tony Khan would book this storyline, because there's really nothing like this storyline and hasn't been in like, honestly, the Bloodline storyline is the longest running storyline in the history of professional wrestling. If you think about it, for episodic weekly television.
Yeah. I mean, there's been comparisons on this show.
Well, I don't know if historic.
How many
NWO was pretty long. Yeah.
Yeah.
But 3 years every week, these, you know,
one of the longest. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's up there. But what do you think it's going to go?
Well, they're obviously going to end up, you know, separating at one point or turning babyface. That's obvious. There's a million things that they can do with them. That's a great group there. It's right. Obviously Paulie's behind it. That's his baby. And, and as far as Billy Body, I agree with, I love the phlegm-induced laugh.
I'm sorry. It's my Artie Lang laugh.
I like the fact that he gets triggered so easy, Billy, and so do the listeners. Right. We get a lot of hate mail on him, and I just laugh because I really actually think, do you think I give a fuck? Don't listen to him.
Right.
It's like if you came to my house and you were to say, hey, I don't like your furniture. It's not for you.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And don't come back to my house again. Yeah.
I don't think Billy would be disliked as much if he didn't, if all he came on our show was just for sports talk.
Right. Which is all he talks to us about, because he doesn't say all this shit because we won't listen to it.
Right. We don't care because we don't give a shit. Right.
Right.
He does that Wrestling Informer show. It's like an hour long. There's no way me and Conan want to listen to these guys talk for an hour on professional wrestling.
Right. I've never heard one show.
Right. Mm-hmm. Me neither. Right. So it's like, you know, we bring them on. Hey, you got a couple big stories. I just like big stories. And we get through the big stories, then we talk sports. So it's like, yeah. All right. That's been the mailbag.